Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 11 of the Two Quarterback Experience, or the Two QB Experience, whatever floats your boat. This is the Matt Ryan Experience on the line. I'm going to remember his name this time and that he's on the call. It's Joshua Lake. How you doing, Josh?
Hey, I'm good. I brought along Pokemon Go. If you ignore me, I was just going to start walking.
Have you caught them all yet?
I have not. It's nostalgic, though.
Do you have to catch them all? Is that really the whole point?
Yeah, life has no meaning if you don't. It's the way it works.
Also on the line, a special guest, the late-round quarterback, J.J. Zacharyson of Number Fire and Living the Stream. How you doing, J.J.?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Fantastic, man. Good to have you on.
Yeah, I'm excited. It's a little bit different for me to talk to QB just because of us focusing so much on that single quarterback stuff with Living the Stream and such, but I'm excited.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to get into how you can try to apply those principles to 2QB leagues, the streaming concept a little later. But we'd be remiss if we didn't start by talking about the Scott Fishbowl.
Yes.
All three of us are drafting. How's it going for you guys so far?
Pretty good for me. I started, I'm going with the running, a fairly running back heavy approach just because of the scoring changes and such. Ended up going late. I was in the three spot. Ended up going, we're through three rounds now. I went Le'Veon with 1.03. Then I got Ingram in the second and Jordy in the third. So I'm feeling pretty good. Associating my players with high-powered offenses, it's what I like to do.
How about you, Josh?
I also am going to end up going running back heavy, I think, although we're only through two rounds. So I've got Lamar Miller and Aaron Rodgers, and I'm pretty happy with it. I hadn't planned on going early quarterback, but I like Rodgers. I think he has more rushing ability than most people are giving him credit for, and I figure if I get one now, I can wait probably 8 to 10 rounds before taking another one.
Yep, I'm on the early running back train as well. I started with David Johnson from the 10th pick and then got Adrian Peterson in the second round, which felt like a bit of a gift. I really had my fingers crossed because Mark Ingram, one of your guys, JJ, was sliding in the third round, and he made it to two picks before I came on the clock. He went eighth in the third round, and man, that feels like such a sick value. It made me a little upset, but you can't blame the guy for drafting him there.
Yeah, no, that's a crazy start too with David Johnson and AP.
Yeah, so I ended up grabbing Demaryius Thomas there in the third round to jump on the wide receivers, and I'm not super excited about that pick, but he felt like the best wide receiver available. The next closest guy for me was probably Sammy Watkins, but in a league like this, that so many people like, I'd rather not commit that sort of risk with my first few picks. I'll try to look at the riskier guys going forward. How do you guys walk that line in terms of risk versus reward in the early rounds? Because with such a big field, you definitely want to have some semblance of a floor, but to win the whole thing, you definitely need a high ceiling as well.
For me, it's really looking at, like I said, I associated my guys with higher powered offenses because I want to have that touchdown upside, because obviously come playoff time, if things all align, if these guys are scoring touchdowns, then that's really how you can catapult yourself and win this thing. And obviously you're going to increase your probability of doing so if your players are in, with the three guys I have the Steelers, the Saints, and the Packers offense. So that's really kind of the look that I'm going for and the strategy that I'm going for with it, just to kind of capture that upside all while having a relatively decent floor.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think this draft, just the scoring settings that we talked about last week, really kind of throws the ceiling on its head. It's a little different where wide receivers typically are the upside, the ceiling plays. Just if you look at the scoring, like we talked about, running backs and quarterbacks were just massively the top scorers last year if you use these scoring settings. And so all of us going running back heavy, if they hit and they stay healthy, that actually is a whole lot more ceiling than some of these wide receivers who are finishing 30th or 40th in the scoring settings.
Yeah, I think it's interesting too when you talk about that running back scoring, because normally when you change a scoring setting like this, when you add PPR, wide receivers relative to each other don't fluctuate that much in terms of value. You'll have some super high catch total guys like Julian Edelman that'll vault a couple spots in ADP or in rankings in those sorts of formats. But I feel like with the rushing bonus in the SFB, that you're really rewarded for getting those workhorse guys, those guys who might be in for every down. And I like your approach, JJ, of going with the guys who also are on the good offenses, because that does increase the chance of, you know, hitting on more touchdowns over the course of the season. But when we're talking about like that relative value, I mean, it still seems like wide receivers are important. We still have to start three of them and can start up to four more in all the different flexes. How do you balance that relative value, like comparison between the different positions? What do you think about that, Josh?
Yeah, I tweeted about some earlier, but I was on the clock at eighth overall and really struggling between Lamar Miller, who I love this year, and OBJ, who is clearly elite and was the end of the tier because Antonio Brown and Julio Jones had already gone. And I really struggled with that just given both the scoring and the positional settings, because you're right, you have all those flex spots to eventually get to. And for me, what I decided is that I would love to eventually get to the flex position and be putting running backs in there if they're kind of high touch guys, if they're ones that are going to get a lot of carries. And so I wanted to start there, but I'm still second guessing it, but I'm just bringing it up now for reassurance, but it's tough. But I do think that the scoring settings and the positional settings really change the way this whole draft is going and change the way you evaluate the positions.
You know, the other thing too with the flex spots, I mean, it's a really weird dichotomy. I mean, it's amazing the way that it's set up because it's making us think like this. But I think that the thing with the flex spots is that ideally you do want those running backs to be in there. If you look back with the scoring settings from last season, I think there were about 40 more running backs than wide receivers that hit the 15 and 20 point marks on a per week basis, and that just tells you that you can throw in those running backs in the flex spot, and you're going to have more than likely have a little bit more success. The problem in general with the running backs though is that they do dwindle very fast, especially when, you know, the reason they haven't per se in best ball and those MFL 10s and such is just because people are forcing wide receiver earlier and allowing some of those running backs to fall into the sixth and seventh round. But I think that what we're going to find with these is that with people going running back earlier, you know, maybe it won't be the case just because there's quarterbacks thrown in as well, but they're going to evaporate quicker than what we're generally used to, which is another reason to kind of go with the running back earlier approach to go along with the fact that you're going to want to use those guys in the flex. But at the same time, it's so strange because you have to fulfill the three wide receiver need, and then you're going to have an easier time finding wide receivers that are somewhat usable for some of those flex spots. So I think, you know, I think as I go into the fifth, into the sixth, and then the seventh round, I'm going to just try to get a good mix going, just because I think that there are so many ways that you can approach it that going with one of those zero RB type strategies might not be the most ideal scenario in a draft like this.
Yeah, and that mix is important because that does set you up to be a little bit more flexible if and when injuries occur, when benchings occur, all that good stuff that is, you know, just bound to crop up when you play fantasy. That point you made about kind of the running backs being a more limited resource in terms of, you know, supply that we have to choose from, that's key to me. And that's why, you know, Josh, if I had been in your shoes, I probably would have taken Beckham, if only because he does represent that elite tier. And I mean, it sounds to me like you believe Lamar Miller is on that level in terms of the running backs. And if that's, you know, your take on him, then for sure you can definitely justify that pick. But I'm not quite there on Miller yet. And that's probably why I would lean towards Beckham in that spot. But yeah, I mean, the settings definitely favor, you know, locking up at least two running backs who can fit those primary running back spots on your roster as guys who are going to have a heavy workload and really hammer that quarter point per carry. Yeah, it's crazy. What else are you guys seeing in your drafts and in the ADP that's been interesting to you? Anything jump out?
I would say from my perspective, I think that we're going to see some folks get a little too excited for particular quarterbacks. You know, I think a guy like Ben Roethlisberger, for instance, jumps to mind. Like, I think Ben Roethlisberger is fine for fantasy purposes. I get the upside that he presents. But I also think that once you're past kind of that elite tier, you know, obviously Josh got Aaron Rodgers, which makes total sense because he could easily be QB1 this season, even with these scoring settings. I think that we're going to find that folks start to reach a bit just because oftentimes replacing a Ben Roethlisberger type quarterback with a platoon of some sort, even, you know, in a super flex league, isn't the most difficult thing to do. because there, you know, we will look at his upside, but he obviously has, you know, a very, his probable outcome is still, you know, QB6, QB7, which is something that you can accomplish through streaming and such, or just platooning. So I think that what we're seeing is people are going to end up reaching a little bit for quarterbacks in that tier, and that's going to push down some running back and wide receiver value, which is going to really benefit folks who don't end up doing that.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And people, I think your first sentence out of your mouth was that they're going to focus on specific quarterbacks and kind of highlight mm-hmm. them. To that point, one division, and I'm just looking at our ADP that we've shared on the site, so I don't know which division or which owner, but somebody took Derek Carr, pick 28 overall.
Yikes.
He went 11 spots ahead of Ben Roethlisberger, and maybe that's right. I mean, I'm all for picking your guys in this format. Like, who cares about ADP? You've got a 1 in 480 shot. So I'm not meaning to belittle the pick as much as, say, I think each division is so unique. You find someone that likes a player, and they're going to take them. And so it can throw the whole draft off for your division.
That was in the Olivia Munn division, which is like the turbo speed draft, the one that's already in round 6 while the rest of us are just slogging along through rounds 2, 3, and 4. Who took that? Who took Carr there, though?
Yeah, it was just one that stood out to me. It was crazy. Yeah, I noticed that, too.
Aaron Herman from Fake Pigskin.
Okay.
It's bold.
Very bold. He did, you know, one reason he might have done it, and this is an interesting concept as well, is he took Amari Cooper in the second round. So mm-hmm. maybe he looked at, you know, the Raiders' schedule in weeks, you know, 12 through 16 and saw a schedule he liked and wanted to stack those two. What do you guys think about that sort of strategy in a league like this?
I don't personally put a lot of stock in strength of schedule when you're talking the second half of the season, like maybe for the first few weeks, but I don't put a lot of stock in it for those playoff weeks. But I do think stacking is probably a smart move here if you can do it affordably. Like, I wouldn't take Carr that early, but I think that stacking is probably the right play. Just like if you're talking a GPP and DFS, that if you really want to hit, probably stacking a quarterback and a receiver or that's probably the best way to do it, even though the wide receivers are devalued here. But that gives you a better chance at upside than needing to hit all over the place.
Now, what if you add in Latavius Murray as part 3 of that Raiders stack? Because he did that just in the most recent pick that he made.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, no.
Maybe it's just a Raiders homer.
Perhaps. I don't know Aaron personally, but yeah. JJ, I cut you off there. You were going to say something. I'm sorry.
No, I think the stacking thing makes perfect sense. And to Josh's point, I think it's more of a, you know, don't feel the need to spend high equity picks on that stack because you can still get lower. Let's say that you get a fifth round quarterback of some sort, and then you end up pairing him with not the number one option in that offense. Or even if you did get an Andrew Luck, don't force T.Y. Hilton. Just wait a round or two to get a Moncrief. Or 3 in the case of what could probably happen in this draft. So I think that's kind of the route that I would go. It's not necessarily just like looking for the top options and just stack them, but look for more of those secondary options so that you're not forcing the issue and ending up taking a guy like Derek Carr that early.
Or do it the other way around and take the wide receiver you want who's maybe in a lower powered offense. Like I'm just going to name Aaron's entire draft list at this point, but he took Jarvis Landry in the 4th round, which is mm-hmm. a nice pick for a half point PPR format like this. If he were to take, you know, Ryan Tannehill like 5 rounds from now, that would make sense to me. Although it looks like Tannehill's already been drafted in this one. This is a weird draft.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, think about it in the playoffs. If you have, you know, a Landry with or a Parker or something with a Tannehill, and then you have Jameis with a Mike Evans or something like that, and those guys just have a couple big weeks together, that's really going to catapult you.
And that's kind of, I think that's the right way to view it, is just figure you're playing a GPP a couple of weeks in a row in the playoffs because you need to be the top scorer for a couple of weeks in a row. I mean, not literally the top scorer, but you need to be right up there at the top if you're going to have a shot. Mm-hmm. So one thing I've been thinking about, and we talked about it some with Sal last week, but the effect of the point per carry, the 0.25 points per carry bonus on rushing quarterbacks, I almost wonder if it's being a little oversold, just seeing like Tyrod Taylor went ahead of Carson Palmer, Marcus Mariota is ahead of Tom Brady and some other very good quarterbacks. And it's significant. It makes a difference. But we're talking about, like we said, 3 quarterbacks last year had 100 rushes or more. That's 25 total points for these players that are breaking 300 points total, getting close to 400 at the elite levels. I kind of wonder if we are overselling the effect that this has on rushing quarterbacks.
Yeah, and not only that, but it's not even the fact that, like, it's not like a Cam Newton is getting 120 more carries than all quarterbacks. I mean, these quarterbacks are still running the ball. Like, Alex Smith is still running the ball half that much or half that amount. I mean, it's still the margin of the two, right? So it's, you know, that then divided by the number of games. It just, to me, like you said, I think it's just a little bit of an overrated thing. Whereas with running backs, I mean, you look at someone like an Eddie Lacy, let's say, who should average 15 plus carries a game. Right there, you're looking at the equivalent of four receptions, and that's a pretty monster deal whenever you're looking at that week in and week out.
Yeah, I actually do think we are overvaluing it with respect to running backs a little bit. If only because what we talked about a little bit earlier, where you still have to fill two quarterback positions, mm-hmm. you still have to fill three wide receiver positions, you still have to fill a tight end. Oh, by the way, there's a tight end premium, so those guys go up in value too. It's like everything's heightened a little bit to the point where it seems like what Scott was trying to do with the scoring settings was make all of the players completely homogenous. And we know that that's not going to be the case, but it is interesting to think about, like, we know that Tyrod Taylor and Marcus Mariota are going to go up in value with these settings, but exactly how much, I mean, that comes down to projections, but it also comes down to health and schedule and all the stuff that normally has to be considered when we talk about fantasy football analysis. I'm with you guys. I think that the running QBs are probably overvalued a little bit. I just think quarterback in general is still so easy to fill that prioritizing those guys probably isn't worth the opportunity cost, you know, in those rounds when you could be drafting those, you know, top tier, mid tier running backs and wide receivers. That's my take on it. So do you guys have anything else you want to touch on with regards to the Scott Fishbowl? We've talked about it a little bit and we could just go on for days. I know we have some other stuff we want to get to, specifically late round QB drafting, and maybe we can apply that to the Scott Fishbowl. But, you know, before we move on, any parting words here on the SFB, Josh?
No, I don't think so. I think we've covered it well. I will say, just for myself, I'm loving it. It's been a lot of fun. It's been highly distracting today. And I love that in July, this many people are focused on fantasy football and debating players. Like the whole hobby has changed so much over the last few years.
Anything else, JJ?
I just hope that Scott is able to get some sleep now after setting this whole thing up.
Oh, for sure. He is a goddamn saint for putting this thing together and dealing with all of us knuckleheads, you know. It's a lot of work that goes into this thing. I hope people realize that.
For sure.
All right. Well, we've got JJ as a guest here. Let's get into his mantra here, late round QB drafting. And JJ, do you want to give a little background real quick? I know you've probably told this story a thousand times at this point, but where, you know, late round QB started for you and why it's still important to you?
Yeah, so, you know, it kind of came about after the 2011 season where we saw the monster quarterback numbers where, you know, four guys were – everyone was throwing for 5,000 yards instead of 4,000 yards, and guys were hitting the 40-touchdown mark, and it was just really out of control. And then the following season, in that 2012 year, we had five quarterbacks that had ADPs in the first two rounds of drafts, which is just – thinking about that today is crazy because we're only 4 years removed from it. But you know, it kind of motivated me to get some discourse out there on the topic. You know, I had been drafting my quarterbacks late my entire fantasy career, and I hadn't seen anything that was written solely and written in on a deep level, the strategy side of what this strategy actually said and dictated. So, you know, I just started writing the book, ended up publishing it in June of 2012. And it really just, instead of looking at, you know, individual player evaluations and such that I think that we kind of get saturated with during the fantasy football season, I wanted to take more of the game theory and the strategy side of things and kind of break it down that way. So the late round quarterback then was born, and the rest kind of is just history.
So we talk a lot about, you know, late round quarterback, and it seems like a simple concept when you talk about, you know, okay, you take your quarterback later in the draft, big deal. But what's the ultimate goal of a late round QB strategy? And can you differentiate between like one quarterback leagues and maybe what your goal might be in a two QB league? Because they have to be different, just the way those two formats are drafted.
Yeah, so I think that the idea is that we are never going in any sort of normal league, we're never going to have perfect rosters. It's just the way that it is. I mean, if you're in a 12-team league, especially in a complete redraft one with no keepers, it's going to be nearly impossible to have a roster where you just have top two players at every single position. So with that in mind, you're going into your draft knowing that you're trying to obtain value in order to just have the best team possible rather than this elite team, unstoppable team. And so with the late round quarterback strategy, that's a way that you obtain value. So you wait on the quarterback position, you build up at the scarce, the high end demand positions, the positions where you're starting two or three of them, if not four, at running back and wide receiver, and you just kind of build up a library of those positions. And there, what that does is not only give you more of those players, but it increases your probability of those guys hitting. And if those guys hit, you're going to have a bigger advantage at those positions than you would ever have at the quarterback position. And so the goal then is to make sure that your running backs and wide receivers are in a good spot, all while obtaining value at the quarterback position. But with that said, you can look late and still find very valuable quarterbacks, especially nowadays, whether you're in the 13th or 14th round, there's still very, very viable guys back there, which just helps the strategy overall. So really, I would say that if anything, it's the later on quarterback strategy definitely is not a game of chicken. You're not there to just be the last person to draft a quarterback. It's more about obtaining value. And once you feel good about your running backs and wide receivers, and I mean, having solid depth as well, that's when you can turn and look at the quarterback position.
So you talked about quarterbacks being available in the 13th, 14th round. That specifically applies to one QB formats. Now, in two quarterback leagues, the demand for those quarterbacks goes way up, and they start to match that of, the running backs and the wide receivers you're talking about. So I'm not sure how much two quarterback you play, JJ, but can you talk a little bit about how you might want to, apply those late round QB concepts to a two quarterback format? How does that break out for you?
Yeah, I actually love to, people always ask me that because they assume that I just want to play in single quarterback leagues to kind of exploit it. But I actually love playing in two quarterback leagues because I still think that there are things that you can do with the idea and the notion of late round quarterbacking and exploit that as well. A big thing with the quarterback position is that of the four major positions, it's the most predictable. And that allows you in a worst case scenario in a redraft league, in a one quarterback league, in a worst case scenario, you can stream the position and feel pretty confident about who you're compiling and this Frankenstein quarterback that you're putting together each and every week, despite the fact that you're throwing Geno Smith as your QB1. So if you take the idea that it's a very predictable position, instead of thinking, oh, I'm just going to stream the position, you platoon the position. I mentioned that earlier, even with the Superflex talk. So with two quarterback leagues, I generally will draft three, maybe four guys who I can then play by matchup, because I know that every quarterback, literally every quarterback, will be usable in some way, shape, or form. And if you know that they're going to be usable, and then you know that they're going to be very predictable, then there's a way to play matchups that you can kind of maximize what this platoon can do rather than just plugging and playing quarterback. So really, I think the idea here is knowing that they're predictable and then taking that predictability aspect and still drafting them late. You obviously can't just the way ADP works in two quarterback leagues. You obviously can't just wait until the 13th round to draft a quarterback because they're not available. You still have to play, even in the Scott Fish Bowl, I can't just sit there and wait until the 9th round to get my QB1 because my QB1 is not going to be anything significant. You have to kind of see where the big quarterback drop-offs are. But when I talk about platooning, I'm talking more about the traditional QB2s in a one QB league and platooning them together to maximize that output each week.
JJ, I was going to ask you, this year feels different. I've written about it that QB ADP is going later in one QB, and Sal has written about it that in two QB we're seeing the same thing, that quarterbacks are going later. And we're still early in July, so I fully expect that ADPs will rise and quarterbacks will go earlier as more casual drafters come in. But are you making any changes to how you draft quarterbacks, or is it the same theory, just perhaps waiting even longer this year?
Yeah, so I mean, I've read what you've written about it because it makes a lot of sense, because essentially what you're saying is the opportunity cost is a lot different this year than it has been in years past, especially with these analyst drafts, because before, the top quarterback might be going in the second or third round, and now in some drafts he's not going off the board until the 5th round. And so that's certainly valid. The only thing I would say is that it seems like there's just a bigger field, and there are more starters, very, very usable with very high upside starters that are being drafted in those double-digit rounds that I don't necessarily feel the need to have to go and reach for a Cam, right? The thing is that every year there is a QB1 that does live up to his average draft position. Last year it was Cam. Year before that it was Andrew Luck. And you know, Cam obviously was a later round quarterback last year, but Andrew Luck, even in 2014, he was a fourth, fifth round pick, and he just played so much better than every quarterback that he did live up to his ADP. The problem, though, is that there are a lot of elite quarterbacks that you have to essentially nail who that guy is if you're going to get a quarterback early. So I think that just given the fact that there is a bigger pool of late round quarterbacks that you can envision being top five passers, I'm not necessarily forcing the issue. But again, I think that what it's done is it allows you to be a little bit more flexible. You know, I'm not, like I said, I'm not going to sit there and play a game of chicken with everyone and just try to be the last person to draft a quarterback. I'm legitimately fine with taking a chance on drafting a guy like Phillip Rivers before other people have their quarterback. So I think, you know, to your point, it's certainly very valid. But at the same time, I think that just the pool of usable guys kind of makes it okay still to wait on the position.
Yeah,
I think that's a great point. Sorry, go ahead, Greg.
I was going to say that's my impression as well. I'm just going to, you know, echo the agreement that Josh just had. I find that even though like the early round QBs ADP is being suppressed, so is the ADP of all the other QBs who I was already okay to use on a week to week basis, to the point where not only do I get to wait on quarterback, you know, by not drafting the top tier talents, I get to wait even longer on the guys that I do want because they're just going later. But yeah, it's interesting. You talk about applying late round quarterback to two QB leagues. And for me, all that really means is that you have to kind of understand what the definition of late is relative to a one quarterback league. Whereas you were talking about, you know, round 13, round 14 for a one QB format. In two QB, you know, a late round pick might be, you know, round 6 or round 8. It all depends. It all depends on how your draft breaks. I mean, you're going to go into some leagues, some home leagues that have two QBs, and, you know, people are just going to hammer the quarterback position. And at that point, you don't want to be caught too far behind necessarily, and that means you might have to reach. But at the same time, if you're, quote-unquote, reaching in the fourth round and everybody else was reaching in round 1 and 2, you're still getting value there. And I think that that's the big takeaway for me.
Yeah, absolutely.
So is there a way, JJ, that you ever apply these sorts of concepts to, you know, other positions like the wide receiver and running back position? I mean, you talk about how it's all about value, and it seems like to you, or like the way I understand the way you've explained your outlook, is that when you look at the quarterbacks, you see the most potential for value in the later rounds. But how do you maximize value of the other positions in the late rounds as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think that you can take the exact same concepts with drafting a quarterback late and associate them with tight ends. Simply because, you know, if you think about a draft board and you think about a 12-team, one quarterback standard league, generally the 24th running back and the 24th wide receivers, so we're talking about, you know, the last starters, if you will, at those positions. If you're looking at the 36th wide receiver, sure, that's fine as well because some leagues start three wide receivers. They usually drop off the board in the fifth or sixth round, just traditionally, historically. That's been a little bit different this year with running backs, wide receivers. But generally speaking, it's been the fifth and the sixth round. Meanwhile, quarterbacks, the 12th quarterback won't leave the board till about round 9. Tight end's going to be a little bit later than that. So what that basically means is that your opportunity cost in drafting a tight end or a quarterback early is a lot larger than what the opportunity cost is with a running back or wide receiver, because those rounds, the points lost are being stretched essentially. So if you get a guy like a Jordan Reed, for instance, in the third round, you're foregoing all of those good wide receiver and running back third round picks. And meanwhile, a guy might get Dwayne Allen in the 11th round. And the difference between Dwayne Allen and Jordan Reed is now being cut between 8 rounds rather than the difference between a running back or a wide receiver at that spot to the fifth or sixth round is being cut only by 2 rounds. So really, you know, that's a very VBD way, value-based drafting way of looking at it. And, you know, there's certainly flaws to value-based drafting. But I think that if you factor in market value a little bit, it allows you to see that, you can wait on the tight end position as well, just because the demand of the position isn't very high because you're only starting one of them in a standard league. It's a little bit different if you can flex the position, but even still, it mostly holds true. So I think that, you know, you can take the exact same concepts of the late round quarterback strategy associated to the tight end position as well. And then, you know, to the same point, I talked about the predictability of the quarterback position earlier. I think one thing, you know, that people should think about whenever they're drafting and whenever they're managing their teams is when you're going into a certain week, the decisions that you have to make. And it's really easy to do hindsight analysis and look at how well a wide receiver performed or how there were so many wide receivers that put up top 12 and top 24 weeks in a given season. But it's really hard to predict that. So the wide receiver position is less predictable than the running back position, which is less predictable than the quarterback position. But if you know that, that's a huge reason as well to draft elite wide receivers, because you're getting consistency at a position that is just not very consistent. And I think that's something that kind of goes unnoticed and isn't thought about enough when we're drafting players. But that's just, again, part of the whole late round quarterback concept, because it's about the predictability aspect of things.
I think that's a really good point, that tight end has become a lot deeper than it seemed to be. I mean, you still have Gronk that's so clearly ahead, and there are tiers within the tight end position, but there are a lot more tight ends. Like, I think about it in terms of MFL 10s, because I've been drafting them since February. And if you don't get one of the... right after the Super Bowl, I was waiting. They didn't have it out the day after the Super Bowl, and I was upset. So, I find myself completely okay waiting on tight end so often that if a very top tight end doesn't fall to me, I still feel like I can get reliable production out of a lot of guys. And I think that is backed up, like you said, it's a little more predictable of a position, and just NFL offenses are starting to use tight ends more and in different ways than they did before. It's becoming a really important part of the red zone offense for a lot of teams, and touchdowns being as valuable as they are, that's an important focus. And so I think that's a good point to think about, is can we translate the concept of late round QB to tight end, and maybe in the future another position, but just to treat it as a general philosophy more than a specific, I only do this for quarterbacks.
Well, I think there's something to be said about not occupying your brain space with some of these other positions as well. I mean, I don't want to completely ignore potential values in any given position, but by and large, I think you can become a better drafter if you start with like the basic core principles of you can wait on quarterback, you can wait on tight end. If you start by focusing your draft on wide receivers and running backs, that's generally going to work out better for you. And as you do that more, as you, you know, implement that sort of draft strategy year after year, draft after draft, I mean, we all know that we're drafting multiple leagues per year when we're really into fantasy. Like, you'll start to learn, you know, piecemeal when you can start to branch out from those core strategies and start to take the tight ends and the quarterbacks a little bit earlier than maybe you would normally. And I think that if you're just getting started in fantasy football, or if you're trying to, you know, work on your quote unquote fundamentals, these are really important concepts to understand, is that tight ends are pretty replaceable. Quarterbacks are pretty replaceable. And then just focus on the two other positions, as your basis. And once you've got that figured out, that'll help you out in a big way in terms of understanding how and when to draft, you know, the one of positions in a one QB format, or, you know, just the, I don't know what the right word is, but like the lesser in demand positions of quarterback and tight end in a 2QB format.
Totally.
With that said, I'd like to talk about a mid-round quarterback for the fantasy community this year. And this is a guy who we used to draft a lot higher, and that's Matt Ryan. He's our spotlight QB on this episode. We're going to start by playing what we call the QB finish game, JJ. I'm not sure if you've heard this on previous episodes, but we try to predict where Matty Ice is going to land in terms of, you know, his ranking at the end of season for total points and points per game. So I'd appreciate if you played along here, and you're the guest, so you have to go first. Where do you think he finishes in total points in 2016?
I have him at QB 14. So I'll put him around there, I guess, in total points. If we're going to include other positions, I think it's around there still. But I have him at QB 14.
Okay. That jives with what I have. I've got him at QB 15. And I think that, my ranking isn't really indicative of that. He's my QB 17 in redraft 2 QB rankings, but part of that has to do with the fact that I believe he's a little more predictable, more stable, more likely to play all 16 games, whereas, you know, other QBs might be better on a per game basis. And generally, those are the types of guys I like to focus on in my drafts, because I like to think that I can always play the waiver wire to some extent and build depth in the draft to where, you know, maybe I am cycling Matt Ryan in and out of my lineup. And if I'm doing that, maybe I would prefer a guy who might not be as likely to play all 16 games, but when he does play, might be better. Josh, where are you at on Ryan for total points?
Yeah, I think we're all generally in agreement, because I had him QB 16, so we all line up right in the same area. And kind of I'd echo what you said, Greg, that he's reliable. He doesn't miss a lot of games. We know who he is. His stat line, apart from last year's touchdowns, has been about identical for 5 years in a row. And so I think we're pretty safe knowing about what he looks like.
Yeah, he was really consistent there for, you know, like you said, those 4 years before last year. If you look at his QB card on 2QBs.com, you'll see that over his, like from 2012 to 2014, he had at least 12 top 20 finishes on a week-to-week basis. So there is a level of consistency that you get with him. What you haven't got recently, or what you haven't got since 2012, are those elite weeks, those, you know, top 10 finishes. He's kind of waned in that sort of production as we've, you know, come to where we are now. How about points per game? What do you think, JJ? Do you think he ranks a little bit better in that regard, or a little bit worse?
I would assume a little bit worse, only because of the fact that he's been pretty consistently healthy, and you would assume that if he's higher, you know, if he does play 16, then he's just going to naturally be a little bit higher in his overall ranks. But again, you know, I think that he's just kind of in that firm high-end QB2 range overall.
How about you, Josh?
Yeah, I have this lower. If I'm guessing, I'm saying QB 18, QB 19 in points per game. I don't think that the upside is quite as high as many other players if we're talking just pure points per game without a threshold.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I have him at QB 18 in points per game, and I think that a lot of that has to do with his, you know, lack of elite weapons outside of Julio Jones. Like we know that Mohamed Sanu is not that great, and we're not really sure what they're doing at tight end. It'll be interesting to see what they do with the running backs, and we'll get into more of that in a little bit. But before we do that, JJ, I know that you like Matt Ryan this year. Can you talk a little bit about why you're high on him, at least in terms of, you know, where he's going in drafts?
Yeah, so I think the caveat here is, you know, when you are drafting, if we're talking one quarterback, when you are drafting them, I think it's key to look for upside. So, you know, I wouldn't necessarily be targeting Matt Ryan in a standard one quarterback league, just because we kind of know what his ceiling is, like you guys alluded to earlier. So, you know, I'd rather go with a guy like Kirk Cousins or something with a little bit more ambiguity. But if we're talking about 2QB or even best ball to a certain degree, I think that there's a lot to like with Ryan, just because of where he's being drafted now versus because a lot of where he's being drafted now has to do with how he performed last season. And how he performed last season was he only threw 21 touchdowns. He had a 3.4% touchdown rate when his career average is 4.5%. You know, I think that I did a little bit of regression analysis over the last 5 years to see what a touchdown rate from a quarterback should be the next season, how it differs. So if a guy had Cam Newton had a 7.1% touchdown rate, historically over the last 5 years, quarterbacks with around that touchdown rate decreased by about 1.3% in their touchdown rate. So with Matt Ryan, he had a 3.4% touchdown rate last year. What that tells us for next season, from a progression standpoint, is that it should be closer to 4.3%. So that's still below his career average. But even if, you know, if he does hover his career average, we're looking at five more touchdowns ish for him in that offense. And I think, you know, overall, you're associating Ryan with one of the best, if not the best, talent at wide receiver in the league. And they did add some weapons. It's going to be questionable as to how those weapons mesh. I think that it's pretty, you know, everyone knows that Mohamed Sanu is not a solid wide receiver two in an offense. I think everyone can agree with that. But at the same time, them playing with Roddy White last season wasn't necessarily a great scenario either. Added the tight end in the draft. I think that overall, The offense, you could make the argument that the personnel is stronger than it was last season. And then with that progression, it just makes Matt Ryan a lot more favorable than he was last season.
And Josh, you had written a piece earlier in the offseason kind of promoting Matt Ryan as well. It might not line up exactly with where you have him ranked today, but can you talk about why you like Matt Ryan a little bit?
Yeah, I like Matt Ryan a lot in the context of a 2QB league for reasons that JJ was mentioning earlier, that he doesn't have the exciting upside that you would want in a 1QB league, but he's incredibly reliable and consistent for the last several years. We have a pretty large sample size. We kind of know who he is. And his ADP finally kind of lines up with who we should expect him to be. That right now in 2QB leagues, our ADP has him at QB 19. He's QB 20 in MFL 10s. So you can get him at the middle to bottom of the QB 2 tier and feel very good that he's going to score within that range with upside for better than that some weeks. Like you said, his top 20 finishes. He's a top 20 quarterback in three quarters of his games, again, excluding last year. And you can't just exclude a full season. I will say that you have to have some explanation for why we should discard last year. But I like that the sample size says he's going to be a top 20 guy pretty routinely week to week. And I've written about otherwise that I really like the boring, reliable QB2s when I'm building a team, just because if I know I can plug and play that position, then it leaves me free to really be creative with what I'm doing with the rest of the team, and looking for the high upside QB3s that maybe take over at some point. I can take more risks if I have that boring guy at QB2.
So that kind of lines up with some of those principles of late round QB drafting that JJ talked about earlier, where you might draft Matt Ryan as your QB2 and then draft, I don't know, let's just say Blaine Gabbert as your QB3 or QB4. It's not impossible to envision a scenario where, that QB3 or QB4 kind of supplants Matt Ryan, like Josh talked about, and finding that sort of player who, because of the low cost, you were able, just to kind of land for free or quote unquote free, finding somebody who essentially graduates, to, steal a term from Living the Stream, into every week's startability. Like, there's appeal to that, right?
Yeah, for sure. I think having a guy in Matt Ryan, Matt Ryan's almost the perfect quarterback streamer in a one quarterback league, just because he is reliable in a worst case scenario. But at the same time, you don't feel, I think that there is an emotional piece to all this too, is that you don't feel that upset or that wrong if you end up, if Blaine Gabbert's playing the Saints and Matt Ryan's playing the Cardinals, I don't know. And you won't necessarily feel that awful starting Blaine Gabbert over Matt Ryan in a given week. And I think that he allows you to have that flexibility, all while, again, at the same time, he's going to progress in terms of what his numbers have shown and that touchdown rate number. So, there is the upside still of him being a higher end QB1 and potentially a lower end QB1. If that's the case, then obviously you got a great value in Ryan. But even if it's not, you can still feel pretty comfortable, getting a lower tiered quarterback to platoon with him a bit.
Yeah, and I think if I had to play devil's advocate against Matt Ryan here, what I would say is that while we do expect him to get better, and I do agree that, a lot of the stigma attached to him right now has to do with a bad 2015, and that's not especially fair. When you look at his previous performance, he does have that track record of good performance, prior to last year. But we do know that, players can decline. We do know that his weapons aren't that good. I think if I had to make a case against him, it would be that, not necessarily that Matt Ryan, quote unquote, is a bad quarterback. He stinks, like, you don't want him at all. But my argument would be that he is fairly priced at this point. And that, we talked about, and this is where that QB finish game comes in, is we talked about where we expect him to finish. And we were talking about QB 15, QB 20, QB is anywhere in that range. And if that's the case, then he's probably going about where he should be going, whether that's in 2QB or 1QB leagues. And I think that's like the word of caution I kind of want to put out to everyone hearing this right now, is that, maybe Matt Ryan does deserve to be ranked lower this year than he had in past years. Like, he was a top 10 ADP quarterback all the way up until last season, and now we've overreacted a little bit. We have him at QB, what was it, 20 or 21? But maybe he only deserves to be, you know, considered the QB 17 or the QB 15 at best. And that would be my word of warning there. What do you guys think about that? Am I off base?
I think that's completely accurate. I mean, you're not drafting Ryan for the upside per se, because we kind of know there's not a ton of equity to be gained. I think there's some, but I don't think, you know, there's certainly not a ton whenever there's guys like a Cousins or something that you might want to reach for a little bit earlier than where you'd be getting Ryan, or in some drafts they might even be going at a similar ADP. So I do understand that thought, that the upside's most definitely not there. It's funny too, you know, Ryan is the guy. I actually went to I did a daily fantasy boot camp with Al Zeidenfeld in Atlanta last summer, and I was doing it on quarterback presentation on quarterbacks, and I was just continuously just pooping on Matt Ryan, just destroying Matt Ryan because of what he is as a quarterback, which is just, I mean, he's essentially, in from a fantasy football standpoint, he's become like the Jeff Fisher of quarterbacks. But I think that we've gotten to the point now though where people are kind of sick of it, and he finally had a season where he wasn't at that borderline QB1 range, and now we just have we see that depreciated cost a bit. And that's really the equity that's to be had. Again, it's not a lot just because he doesn't have a massive ceiling, but I think it's enough to make you intrigued in a 2QB or even a best ball league.
I'd like to point out at this point that in my research for this podcast, I pulled up an article by a person named JJ Zacharyson from August 3rd, 2015, that says, "Please stop drafting Matt Ryan."
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I've not been kind to Matt Ryan. I didn't realize until after that presentation was over that I remembered that I was actually in Atlanta and there were a lot of people that were so like I'm sitting there, I'm like, yeah, Matt Ryan sucks. Why would you be drafting Matt Ryan? And then afterwards this dude's like, dude, you know that we're in Atlanta right now. It's like, crap, man. That's not good.
Was that better or worse than your anti Andrew Luck article and the backlash from that?
There's nothing worse than there's two fan bases, the Derek Carr fan base and the Oakland Raiders fan base and the Indianapolis Colts fan base. I can't go to those two cities after what happened last.
All right. Well, I've finished my Denny Carter Memorial IPA. I've moved on to beer number two. And you know what that means. It's time for some Twitter questions. Do you guys have anything else on Matt Ryan before we move off of that topic?
I think we're good.
Cool. The first is related, and this actually didn't come in on Twitter. I just wrote it in and put my Twitter handle next to it because I'm curious about what you guys think of this guy. And this question is, how should we value Tevin Coleman this year? I feel like we finally got some news today. I saw some Roto-World blurb or something about how, you know, Tevin Coleman how Devontae Freeman's workload is going to decrease this season. And I think most of us who are tuned into this stuff knew that that was inevitable. But the question remains for me, like, how good can we expect Tevin Coleman to be? What sort of workload are you expecting? Josh, what do you feel about this guy moving forward?
So I know very little about the running back position. I'll just throw that out at the beginning, but it has to be better. I mean, last year we had such high expectations and he clearly did not live up to those. But I think it's worth noting that with injuries to both players, he was coming in looking like he had a shot at being the starter over Devontae Freeman last year. And Freeman had an incredible year, and not to take away from it, but it was all sorts of helped out. I mean, we talk about how Matt Ryan didn't have the touchdowns he normally would. It's because Devontae Freeman was getting into the end zone at an extraordinary rate. And Freeman also kind of collapsed over the second half of the season. I mean, relative to his first half of the season, he still was a fine running back. But I do think that the Falcons are going to try to get Tevin Coleman involved, and so there's some appeal there. For me, I will say I have not drafted him. All of my reference points, again, are MFL 10s, and I've not drafted him much because he's going in the 10th round, which is kind of where I've been looking to get a first quarterback most of the time in the 10th round. And so I don't have a lot of shares of him, but I do think he's an interesting guy. I wonder, though, how capped he is after they had the year they had with Devontae Freeman, if he really has a high touch upside, or if we're just looking for kind of fluke weeks where he might be more interesting in best ball and might not really be startable too many weeks in a traditional league.
What are your thoughts on Tevin Coleman, JJ?
Yeah, so I saw the report today, and my initial thought was, you know, I like to grab running backs who will be at least the third down running back on their team. And we know that what Devontae Freeman does best is catch the football. That's where he was being drafted last year, is he was a higher end backup who could catch the ball out of the backfield, like a Charles Sims. So if we know that if Devontae Freeman's healthy, he's still going to be the primary pass catching back, that does hurt Tevin Coleman overall, especially in PPR leagues. So my take kind of is, you know, what's the difference between a Tevin Coleman and a Chris Ivory, other than Chris Ivory would probably have a more secure role in his offense and he's going about a round earlier. So to me, you know, I'm not necessarily putting a lot of stock in what was said. I think that Coleman still has the same type of allure that he did before, which is if Devontae Freeman goes down, then Coleman has that RB2 upside. Potentially, I mean, if he's really, really good, because we don't completely know, then maybe RB1 upside. But I think that overall, you can't just assume that, you know, the only way that you should really be targeting Tevin Coleman, I think, is if you're going with more of a zero RB approach. Otherwise, I don't think he's gonna give you consistent usable weeks, only because Devontae Freeman is that pass catching back on that offense.
Yeah, and I think that Josh made a good point in that the allure of, you know, last season's production is that, you know, whether or not people realize how good Devontae Freeman is or isn't, there will be, you know, emphasis on getting him touches because of the year he had in 2015. So, yeah, that is a lot of what makes me shy away from Coleman. But I do agree that, you know, in the case of an injury or whatever else, like Coleman, you know, could be a value. It's just, you know, what are the odds of that? We don't really know. Next question comes from at Empire FFL. He says, what happens first in the Scott Fishbowl? JJ drafts a quarterback or FF Contrarian drafts a running back?
Hold on.
Let's let Josh guess first.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
Well, since we're just pigeonholing you guys into complete stereotypes, I'll say JJ takes a quarterback. I mean, we've seen he's willing to flip flop on Matt Ryan, even Derek Carr to some extent. I mean, maybe he becomes early round quarterback.
He was professing his love for Philip Rivers earlier on this very podcast. I heard him do it.
Very true. Yeah, I would say, you know, I've done a lot of drafts with Sean. I don't think I've been in a 2QB league with Sean. But other leagues that I've been in with Sean, I certainly draft my quarterback later than he drafts his running back. I will say that.
It is hilarious that the Scott Fishbowl, like, to, you know, circle back to that, is that it's funny how not only is the quarterback position a much higher value, but so is the running back position. So you guys are both kind of, you know, thrown off your games to some extent by this, I'd imagine, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, I think that you have to go into it with the idea that you should be and you will be flexible. So I don't know what Sean's approach is in this draft. I mean, Sean's much more of a wild card than I am whenever we draft and such. I still am a pretty conservative player overall, so who knows what Sean's going to end up doing. But, you know, I think that it's, like you said, it's an interesting dynamic here, because you know this is what's amazing about the Scott Fishbowl, is that there's no obvious strategy. There's not one obvious strategy. So I think that you're going to get people who follow a certain way that they're not going to be able to when a certain pick comes and like, oh crap, I haven't gotten my quarterback yet, or oh crap, I don't have any running backs. So that's really the main reason that I'm trying to be as flexible and level-headed as possible throughout the entire draft.
Nice. Yeah. Our next question comes from Adam Cahill. He's at the other FF guy on Twitter. He says, pick a third round running back in the SFB format. Carlos Hyde, LeSean McCoy, CJ Anderson, or Thomas Rawls. He says that's a tough tier. And I do tend to agree that, you know, those four guys are difficult to rank in this context. I have the guy I like. But JJ, what do you think of these four running backs?
Yeah, so I mean, the thing with Carlos Hyde is that I don't love the fact that they might not score a lot of points, and he's not a pass catching back either, which still helps even if it's 0.5 PPR, not full PPR. CJ Anderson should be a workhorse, but again, they might not score much either, and with their quarterback situation. Thomas Rawls has the injury concerns. Process of elimination there is Sean McCoy. I actually like McCoy a lot this year, just because I think he's just been generally undervalued. Last season he was one of the more consistent running backs in fantasy, and he should come in healthy, hopefully healthy, and hopefully he stays healthy. And hopefully that whole offense can just stay healthy throughout the season, because if it does, I think that they could have a really nice ground attack And I think McCoy, just being the every down back that he is, you know, there's already really negative reports about Carlos Williams as well. So you shouldn't worry that much about him digging into his workload. And even if he does dig into his workload, even if LeSean McCoy only sees 50% of the team's backfield rushes, that's just because they're a much more run heavy team.
Rex Ryan.
That's still going to be enough volume. A 50% share in that backfield versus a 60 to 65% share in the Saints backfield is roughly similar. So I wouldn't really worry about the fact that there's other backs there to compete with McCoy. I think he's the guy in that tier.
Before I let Josh chime in, you did throw out a lot of hopefully with regard to that Bills offense. I'm curious how you guys would approach this. Now when we have an offense like that where, you know, not only is there, you know, like a question mark about one position, but there are question marks about all positions. I sound like Chris Tucker and, you know, Fifth Element right now. Sure. For me, that makes me more worried about those players, like all of them together. How do you guys handle that and how do you approach that from a drafting perspective? Do you devalue all the players? Do you try to guess, you know, which players are going to stay healthy, which ones aren't? Like, what's your approach?
I do think it's concerning when you have question marks kind of all over the place and a lot of unknowns. There are certain things like you mentioned, Rex Ryan is going to run the ball. And so if that's McCoy, great. It makes me more willing to throw a dart at Carlos Williams late. I think we know generally what the team is going to try to do and what Rex is going to do if things fall apart. And so I look more to that. So if things go bad, if things break, then I think he's going to try and run. And so I want to get pieces of that running game if I can. I'm not going to reach too far on McCoy, but either of the two backup running backs in a deep league, I might be willing to take a shot on.
What do you think, JJ?
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think that the one thing that we all need to pay attention to as well is the kind of offseason moves that these teams have made. So with the Thomas Rawls, not only does he have the injury concern, but obviously they drafted two running backs, one of them being a premier pass-catching back, which certainly doesn't help Thomas Rawls' outlook. I think, you know, it's kind of crazy because Thomas Rawls was legitimately unstoppable last season.
He was so good.
Yeah, he was really unbelievable, and I've never seen really a running back do as well as he did and then have this kind of negativity towards him the following season. I mean, he was better than what we saw out of Jeremy Hill in his rookie season. I think that you have to kind of look and see what these teams have done around that running back as well. A guy like CJ Anderson, for instance, is actually that's a decent outlook for him because they spent money on him. They needed to keep him. They wanted to keep him. They didn't really care about Ronnie Hillman. He was just some friend that came around with CJ Anderson, it seemed like. So I think you have to look at that stuff, too. But at the end of the day, I think that, as Josh said, it's nice and you feel comfortable in the fact that Rex, you know, that Rex Ryan wants to run the ball and that favors McCoy.
All right. So getting back to Adam's question here. Josh, do you have a preference among these four running backs?
I have them all close, and honestly, I'm sitting here pre-drafting them because it's looking like I'm going to go to bed without picking, and so that's the tier that my draft is at, is if I go running back, it'd be one of them. So I'm selfishly not going to say, but here's what the ADP says so far in the Scott Fishbowl.
What
so
a this cop is purely, out.
I know, but you should expect
atrocious.
Nothing less at this point. ADP just for the SFB so far is CJ Anderson. Five picks later, McCoy goes. Rawls goes the very next pick, and then an eight-pick wait until Carlos Hyde. So CJ Anderson is clearly the head of that tier, and Hyde is clearly the tail of that tier, according to drafters so far.
Yeah, for me, I'll echo a little bit of what JJ talked about with McCoy, and that, you know, process of elimination, he's the, you know, most direct route to more touches. Especially because, you know, even if the Bills aren't winning, he might see work in the passing game. But I will make a case for CJ Anderson, and that is that, you know, kind of like a Rex Ryan style team, that Denver Broncos defense is really good, and they might just, you know, want to keep the ball out of Brock Osweiler's hands Mark Sanchez and Paxton Lynch's hands as much as possible. And if that's the case, then even if Hillman is involved, CJ Anderson could still see a very heavy workload. And so I think that he's right there with me alongside McCoy. Rawls, the injury concerns worry me. Hyde, the usage concerns me. So I think it's down to CJ Anderson and McCoy. I think that McCoy is the safer bet, but I think CJ Anderson has a little bit more upside. That's where I land on those four guys. Our next question comes from Jake R. At Jake TPE on Twitter. He says, discuss the validity of late round quarterback in two QB leagues where 7 to 8 quarterbacks will be gone by the end of the second round. Is it wise to go QB at 101 and then look for RB / wide receiver values at the turn? I'll start here and say, no, not really. I mean, I don't think that you should let the early round habits of your other league mates dictate what you do with your first pick. I mean, you want to make the best pick possible for your team. And I do still believe that even in two quarterback leagues, that's probably a wide receiver or running back at 101. Do you guys agree or disagree? Josh, you want to go first here?
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, 7 to 8 quarterbacks, I am not at all frightened about taking the 9th or 10th quarterback in a two quarterback league. I probably would take one there at the 2-3 turn if it's that heavy, but I would certainly consider even waiting further than that. I don't think that there is such a huge edge in whatever quarterback you would take at 101 over the 9th quarterback that it's worth passing on Antonio Brown if you're in a PPR league, or Le'Veon Bell if you're not too worried about the injury and it's a standard league. I'd rather go with that player and just wait on quarterback. I don't think that 7 to 8 quarterbacks is nearly as scary as it used to be when there wasn't as much talent at the position, kind of per JJ's point earlier.
What do you think, JJ?
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I think it's one of those scenarios where, you know, as I said earlier, the scariest part for me from a two quarterback standpoint isn't the fact that I'm going to go into my season with a platoon of very, very mediocre quarterbacks. It's more so being afraid that the 11 guys in my league are going to go quarterback crazy and I'm going to be stuck with really, really bad quarterbacks. So I think that to answer the question, it's I'm not afraid in the first couple of rounds because you can easily adjust for that. Whereas if, you know, you get into the 4th and the 5th and people are taking like some teams are taking their 3rd quarterback because they're being jerks about it, then yeah, like, you know, you have to eventually give in and be like, okay, I'm not really gaining any value at this point because the rest of my league mates suck. So I think that's really the way that you should approach it rather than, you know, thinking that you have to jump in on this run because you saw it in the first two rounds.
Yep, totally agree. Our next question is from Justin Edwards at lowercase 11. He says, how much are you devaluing the Woodhead / Riddick / Sims types in SFB? So, you know, those pass catching running backs, the guys who don't get a whole lot of carries. These types of players typically see a big bump in PPR formats relative to the other running backs available. But now that we have that quarter point per carry bonus, these guys tend to maybe be overvalued or a little fairly valued if you're used to drafting a PPR league. JJ, what do you think about these sorts of running backs?
Yeah, so I don't want to show my hand too much here, but
come on.
So I think that a guy like Charles Sims, I think is almost ideal actually in SFB 480, but Danny Woodhead and Theo Riddick are not. And the reason for that is you have to think upside in the scenario because there's so many teams. You need to have a unique ceiling to your team. If you get a guy like Charles Sims thinking, oh, he's just going to be a third down back the entire season, then sure, then avoid Charles Sims because he's not going to have as much value. But Charles Sims' value really is that what happens if Doug Martin goes down. And if Doug Martin goes down, Charles Sims is going to get early down work as well, whereas Danny Woodhead wouldn't see as much because we've seen that happen in the past and he wasn't, you know, a workhorse back. And Theo Riddick certainly isn't either. Not only that, but we don't know which running back would have to go down in the Lions backfield for Theo Riddick to take over some early down work. So guys like Charles Sims or like TJ Yeldon, where we don't know what their early down workload kind of looks like, I think they're perfect targets in a league like this because you're looking at ceiling and they're guys that if their top running back goes down, they could be high-end RB2s.
Josh, what do you think?
No, I think that's a fantastic point that you want to look for that. I will say that there is some difference in the PPR backs. Like Woodhead has a lot more appeal to me because of his the way they've employed him in the red zone and the touchdown upside that he's shown versus someone that's not going to get that same involvement. And so I won't name specific players, but for those PPR backs, I would look, have they been involved in the red zone? Is there any shot that they're going to get touchdowns? Because that does seem to distinguish that type of role. But I would agree with everything else you guys have said about that kind of third down back.
Yeah, that's a great point about Woodhead, is that we have evidence of the Chargers using him as a red zone option. And that does increase his appeal a little bit. I think that in general, for me personally, like, I don't like, even in PPR formats, like, these guys can be so variable. Like, if their teams get out to early leads, they might just not see the field because, you know, those plotting running backs are getting in there. You can try to predict that sort of game script stuff with, you know, point totals and all that, and that's useful. But I'm the type of player who likes to target, you know, the workhorse running backs in the first place. You know, your David Johnsons, your Adrian Petersons, your Le'Veon Bells, to the point where I don't have to even, like, make these decisions. That's my own personal, you know, draft strategy. If you're the type of person who likes to take wide receivers early and go after these types, I would definitely, you know, take the advice that JJ and Josh have given here and run with that. Our next question comes from Kevin O'Brien at the FF or at underscore FF underscore engineer on Twitter. He says, 7 quarterbacks had a QB 24 or higher ADP in 2015 and finished better than QB 24 in points per game. Are we sure quarterbacks should be drafted early here? And I think he's specifically talking about the Scott Fishbowl, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, he was. And I thought that was a really fascinating stat. I've talked about plenty that I think 2015 was kind of an aberration with how many late quarterbacks we saw jump up in points per game. But I do think there's something to it that, like I said, I drafted Aaron Rodgers because I'm very convinced that he is still elite and still going to be a good quarterback this year and going to be in a tier up there with the top guys. But I'm not that excited in going early at quarterback if I don't get one of those top guys that I feel strongly about, because I do think that we're going to miss on some and we're going to not draft some, and there's going to be all sorts of movement just like we see every year.
Yeah, for me, it really comes down to the fact that this, you know, statistic that Kevin throws out is only looking at QB 24 or higher, but that doesn't necessarily dictate what should or can happen at the top of a draft, right? Yes, you can find values in the late rounds, but you have to pick the right players, or you have to, you know, luck into the right players off the waiver wire. That's just how this stuff works. I think that there is still value in getting those, you know, elite guys, getting those, you know, predictable guys like Matt Ryan, as we discussed earlier, because we know those guys are probably, like, odds on going to end up in that QB 24 or higher range. And yes, you can gamble with that. And yes, you should gamble with that in some, you know, scenarios in terms of, you know, going after those late round quarterbacks. But for me, the takeaway is more not to avoid the early round guys, but more to be a little agnostic when it comes to the later round guys, like not caring if I end up with, you know, Blaine Gabbert versus RG3 versus, you know, Geno Smith or Ryan Fitzpatrick. I think that when you get into the later rounds, you can care less about which specific quarterbacks you get, because we know that it is such a toss-up when you get down to those ranks. JJ, what do you think about this?
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, we talked about it earlier a bit where with Josh going with a guy like Aaron Rodgers, we know Aaron Rodgers has QB1 upside. And when I say QB1, I mean, you know, that guy who is so much better than the rest of the field, having that sort of outlier season like we see almost every single year. Whereas getting a guy like Ben Roethlisberger, I just don't see it. Because he is replaceable. So I think that kind of plays into this whole idea of looking for strictly upside with those later picks if you don't get one of those elite quarterbacks.
Our last question comes from Brian Smith. This was the review contest winner to get into the Scott Fishbowl at SmithBK on Twitter. He says, what are your top 3 Denny Carter parody accounts?
Oh, man. I think that you have to go with GOPD Carter. That's a good one. A lot of good political takes on that one. I like CD Cornter. That's a good one as well. And then the last one, you have to go with, I mean, I
give us the classic.
I tweeted about this earlier today. Kenny Darter is like a person in the industry now. And it's the most bizarre thing I've ever seen in my life. Like, he's in Scott Fishbowl and he's drafting. I mean, you know, we had that whole thing where it was, you know, last season it was get Gronk, get Luck, log out.
He could do that.
And he's doing that in this, like, this is.
He went Luck Rodgers.
Yeah. Oh, did he go Rodgers in the second?
Oh, come on, Darter. You got to take Gronk.
Yeah, you got to get Gronk, man. But yeah, that's, it's fascinating to me. I mean, Denny has done a brilliant job at branding all of this and having, I mean, people legitimately think that he is making these parody accounts as if, I mean, we all know that he's vain because he loves his hair so much, but like that he's actually creating these accounts. And like what is, do you guys think that he's that sick of a human being to do this? Like,
no, because there are way too many of them too.
There's like, way too many.
I saw one that I think Denny's retweeted it once or twice, but it's like a wrestling one for Andy Dalton. Have you guys seen that one?
No.
It's like CD Dalton. Oh my God. And it's like all like Macho Man Randy Savage voice, all caps. It's friggin' ridiculous.
I think there are so many parody accounts that I don't think Denny could come up with that many passwords.
Are you saying he wouldn't reuse a password for all of them?
Well, you know, Denny's an interesting guy.
Much love to CD Carter, man. Denny's a saint for putting up with all that, to be honest.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, that's all we've got in terms of Twitter questions. I'm glad we went out on that one. Man, I want to give you guys a last chance here to talk about anything else that's been on your mind. Josh, when we have the three-person pod, it's always tricky. I kind of take on the host role. But, Josh, do you have anything else you want to touch on before we get out of here?
No, you do a great job kind of managing the circus that is having a guest. I don't have a lot to add. Like I said earlier, I am very much excited that fantasy football has started in July, that there is this much excitement, there's this much debate, that we are really starting kind of the evaluation process early, and we're only a couple of weeks removed from camp starting. So it's a fun time. I am excited that football is finally back.
How about you, JJ? Any parting thoughts here?
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, it's to the point where I'm going to set my alarm at 3 a.m., not because I'm afraid of missing my pick, but just because I want to see who other people picked. I mean, that's what the Scott Fishbowl has really done. It just gets us excited about things, and it's the perfect way. You know, at first, I think some people were upset or are upset that it's not later in the season, in the off season, just because you know, you want more information, and right now there's a lot of question marks. But I think it's great because it's like an unofficial kickoff, or now maybe an official kickoff within the industry. So it's an awesome time.
Yeah, very cool. And once again, we need to give a lot of thanks to Scott Fish for putting this all together. It's been really awesome just through three rounds for me. Like, I can't wait. I mean, we're going to go 22 rounds in this thing. It's going to take forever, and I'm going to love every minute of it. JJ, one more thing before you go. Do you want to tell folks where they can find your work and how they can contact you if they want to do that?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at LateRoundQB, and all my work is over at numberfire.com. We publish lots and lots of content, both not just for football even. We do MLB, NBA, and so check out numberfire.com. That's where all my work is at, and then LateRoundQB on Twitter.
And make sure you check out the Living the Stream podcast that he and Denny do together. It's one of the funniest podcasts out there with fantasy football. I listen to it religiously. I'm not always, you know, the day it gets published, I'm listening, but I never miss an episode. And you know, I'd advise the same for you. I wish, JJ, that we got the type of ridiculous questions that you got in terms of the Twitter questions from the listeners. But you know, maybe someday we can aspire to meet that.
It's frightening. They know that our listeners have gotten to the point where they know way too much about us that it's becoming scary. The questions that they ask, just because they've become so. I mean, they know every food take that we have. I mean, they know it. It's such a good time though. And hopefully, you know, the good time that Denny and I have really comes out in the podcast and in the production.
It totally does. I mean, that sort of stuff definitely translates. Like, if you guys are having a good time, the listeners are going to have a good time. And it's something that, you know, we're trying to do here on the 2QB experience. And hopefully we'll get there someday. Hopefully we're there now. But, you know, it takes practice. I will admit to that. If you want to, you know, tell us how we're doing, one way you can do that is by rating or reviewing the podcast. You can do that on iTunes. I always say you can do it on Stitcher, but to be honest, I don't even know what Stitcher is, and I don't know if you can review the podcast on there. But, you know, if you can and you want to, you should definitely do that. That would help us, you know, attract more listeners, I'm sure, and that would be good for us. I appreciate
it. Just buy an iPhone already.
Just buy an iPhone, you fuckers. Man, I have had two beers. I just dropped an F-bomb, I think, for the first time in the history of this podcast.
Nice.
You can...
Been there.
Yeah. I actually, one question I wanted to ask you, JJ, is you've been mispronouncing the word chat on your podcast a lot lately. Have you been ill? Have you been sick? Like, what's going on? Is it a speech impediment?
It just comes out that way.
Okay. Because for a while it was Shat was as far as you guys will go.
Yeah, and now it's just no holds bar, man. We just go at it.
I love it. I can't lie. You can follow 2QBs on Twitter at 2QBs. You got to spell it out, TWOQBS. We're on Instagram as well and Facebook. You can search us up there for longer form questions, or if you just want to, you know, bounce anything else off us that you can't do in 140 characters, you can email us at 2QBs@gmail.com. Josh is hosting mock drafts all the time for 2QB formats. Get at him at Lake2QBs on Twitter, or just ping the 2QB's Twitter account, and we'll get you set up to join in the, you know, upcoming round of 2QB mock drafts. I'm really excited for the season. I know you guys are too. Thank you all for listening very much. We'll catch you next time, and we're out of here.